Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Let's take a closer look now at today's major ruling out of the U.S. Supreme Court. In a 5-4 decision split along conservative and liberal lines, the court ruled that public sector unions cannot compel government workers to help pay for collective bargaining. Writing for the majority, Justice Samuel Alito said that public sector unions, in requiring so-called agency fees from government employees, were effectively forcing those same employees to support union political activities they might not agree with. Quote, "It's hard to estimate how many billions of dollars have been taken from non-members and transferred to public sector unions in violation of the First Amendment," Alito writes. Well, in a scorching dissent whose rage practically leaps off the page, Justice Elena Kagan accused the court of, quote, "weaponizing the First Amendment," saying this was not the first time the court had sidestepped its role as a legal body and used speech protections to choose winners and losers in long-running political debates. Quote, "Almost every economic and regulatory policy touches speech," Kagan writes. "And at every stop are black-robed rulers overriding citizens' choices. The First Amendment was meant for better things." Well, there is so much to dig into here, so let's do that. And let's turn now back to Nancy Gertner. She's WBUR legal analyst and retired federal judge. Today, joining us from Aspen, Colorado. Hello, Judge Gertner.
Hello.
Okay, also with us is Barbara Mataloni. She's the president of the Massachusetts Teachers Association. Barbara Mataloni, it's good to have you back.
Good to see you.
And Charlie Cipio, he's a senior fellow at the Pioneer Institute for Public Policy Research and former policy director in the Massachusetts Executive Office for Administration and Finance. Charlie Cipio, good to have you back.
Good to be here.
Judge Gertner, let me just ask you a couple quick questions here, your reaction to these decisions, because you heard Elena Kagan, me quoting her dissent there, saying that the court is weaponizing free speech.
Right. I mean, what she is saying here is that we're applying free speech principles to applying them categorically, applying them, forcefully in settings in which they have never been applied like that. And one, of course, is the rights of free speech of employees vis-a-vis public public government employment. The case that the court upended today was a 40-year precedent, which allowed there to be agency fees, mandatory fees for union activity. But they were titrated. They were less for those who were not part of the union than for those who were part of the union. The notion was that if you chose not to join the union could nevertheless was obliged to bargain on your behalf, and you had the advantages of union membership. You had to pay something for that, but you didn't have to pay as much as a union member would. So, for example, the idea was to try to figure out a way that you wouldn't have to pay for ideological or political positions. When the court takes the union fee and calls that a First Amendment right, the right to with whom to associate, that's the way they put it, that can't be abridged in the way this law required it.
Yeah.
Then it upends a regulatory framework. And in this case, the regulatory framework was, settled expectations about public sector unions and the government.
Can I jump in here, though, Nancy? Because, I mean, Samuel Alito, in his majority opinion, says clearly that you can't differentiate between types of union spending. He said the line between chargeable and non-chargeable expenditures has proven to be impossible to draw with precision. Doesn't he have a point there?
Well, actually, you have 40 years of litigation trying to draw that line. It's not drawn perfectly, but clearly those who are not members of the union pay less than people who are members of the union. And the idea is to figure out, that's a line drawing which is not an illegitimate line drawing. And what Kagan is saying is that that's the kind of balance we've been working through. But getting just to the point about the weaponizing point, just yesterday the court said that the state of California can't require licensed clinics that don't provide abortion services, that are, pro-pregnancy clinics, can't be required just to tell people there are free services for abortion and contraception. That just being required to say that violated their rights. And one way of looking at the California case yesterday is a non-ideological way to say, this was a consumer issue. Let me tell you about other available services. And the court said that was improper because it violated the First Amendment rights of the clinic. So I think that what Kagan is trying to say here is that speech is involved in every regulatory framework, in consumer protection laws. You can't, you know, you can't make this claim, you can't make that claim. If the court is going to intervene and say, I'm sorry, this statement is, you can't make that statement and pick and choose, then judges are affecting a regulatory framework.
Nancy Gertner, stand by here for just a second because I should definitely need to turn to Charlie Chippio and Barbara Mataloni. Charlie Chippio, let me start with you. I mean, pick up where Judge Gertner left off. Do you see judges making effectively what seem to be political decisions from the bench, picking and choosing winners, which is essentially what Elena Kagan is asserting in her dissent?
Well, look, I mean, I think it happens all the time. But what I would say, I guess my focus on this, as anybody who has ever seen the transcript that was left in the rubble after taking 6 years to finish at the bottom of my law school class, I'm much more focused on the impact of this than I am, you know, on the legal, you know, and exactly what the legal decisions are and what's behind them. I mean, to me, the issue is fundamentally that you've got 28 or 29 states where there is not going to be any impact because they're already right-to-work states. You've got a number of states that are not right-to-work states, but where unions are weak. And in those states, I think that it will have a negative impact. And then you have a few states, you know, Massachusetts, New York, California, where organized labor just has outsized political muscle. And in those states, I think this case, this ruling will help level the playing field.
Level the playing. Okay, so Barbara Mataloni here. We are in Massachusetts. Charlie Chippio says you have outsized political muscle.
I find it ironic that in a decision that came down because of the political muscle of funders like the Koch brothers and other wealthy special interests that have been pushing this case and other cases, which their primary purpose is to, as they say, to defang and defund unions, is talking about outsized political muscle. It's ironic to be talking about that in Massachusetts, where just 2 years ago, the political spending by interests such as the Pioneer Institute supported of almost $30 million to try to pass a ballot initiative to privatize public education in Massachusetts.
You're talking about question two, but no
but,
one
no,
to spent in what, $19-20 million
but
as well? The
15,
MTA the
15.
But the but MTA outsized, led on
but
that.
But Megna, let's talk about outsize political muscle. These were special interests, these are individuals, these are corporations. What unions represent are working people who put their money together and organize themselves in order to have democratic workspaces and in order to improve the lives of not only working people in their local union, but in their community.
Yeah. But let me just jump in here.
Democracy is not outside political muscle.
The
That's
court is saying,
towards.
Though, that it should that these same public sector unions should not be compelling government employees to pay even these so-called agency fees, because they can't be sure if those fees are being used for activities such as the MTA's advocacy against question two. I mean, doesn't that make sense? Does that make or does that make sense to you? I guess it probably doesn't.
I think Justice Kagan really nailed it in her dissent when she talked about the weaponization of the First Amendment. Unions are places that are about democracy. They're democratic spaces. And they are about having democratic workspaces. The wealthy special interests who are looking to undermine unions are not interested in democracy. They're the very 1% that are attacking us in a variety of different ways, not only in terms of unions, but in terms of changing the tax code.
Well, let me get Charlie to respond
here. We are at
a
moment in our country where we have the greatest wealth inequalities than we've ever had. Unions will protect us from that and will give us the opportunity to build back economic justice.
I'm going to come back to you in a second, but Charlie Chippio, I know you want to respond.
Yeah, I mean, look, on a national basis, I think a lot of what Barbara's saying is right. The reality is that Massachusetts is a very different picture. If anyone is the one percenters in Massachusetts, it's organized labor. 18 out of the 20 political action committees that give the most money to candidates in Massachusetts are labor unions or labor organizations. There's a retired employees thing in there. What that translates to is a situation where, for example, public employee contract negotiations consist of public officials who are supposed to represent us, who are essentially bargaining supposedly on our behalf, but are bargaining with their own benefactors. So what you end up with, and of those 18 out of the 20 PACs that give the most to candidates, those labor PACs, more than 90% of the money they give goes to Democrats. And so what you have...
But what's the problem with that? They have the right to do that. That, too, is their free
speech,
right?
Right. But that's just it. How can you say that, you know, it's like, the, you know, the Koch brothers are horrible. I certainly don't agree with a lot of what the Koch brothers are for. But, you know, how's that different from what unions do? How's that different from what George Soros does? The reality is that anytime that you have that much power concentrated in one place, what you have is, in Massachusetts, is you have this Tammany Hall-like nexus between organized labor and the dominant
political
party.
But, Charlie, let me ask you, just a point that Barbara Mattaloni was making earlier. Isn't there a fundamental difference between power concentrated amongst a few people because they are billionaires versus power that ends up being concentrated, but it's actually quite distributed because it's for thousands or potentially tens of thousands of employees? Well, isn't there a fundamental difference
there? I think
there?
We're going to see now, because I don't know how distributed that power is, because the reality is that, you know, look, you know, you've got a bunch of one of the immediate things this is going to affect is that you've got a bunch of educators in Massachusetts who have petitioned the SJC to say that, you know, to challenge the agency fee and say they don't want to pay it. Well, I think that maybe there's a lot of educators, and it's not just educators, it's other unions who don't necessarily agree with a lot of the positions they take. And so, you know, let's see if it's concentrated, because I think what you're going to see now is you're going to see unions actually having to stick to their knitting and having to focus on the things that they're
okay.
To earn members, to focus on the things that their members care about.
Barbara Mattaloni, let me ask you about that, because the decision today is actually quite sweeping. I mean, Justice Alito writes that not only can unions not compel people to pay the agency fees, but basically any fees whatsoever. And when we've had you know, sort of similar-ish type rulings in other states, I'm looking at Michigan after 2012, their education association's membership dropped by 25%. So, I mean, do you anticipate that kind of shrinkage for a group like the MTA?
I anticipate what we're already seeing, which is that to the degree that MTA and other unions within the state have been helping members to organize around critical issues, not only about their work sites, but about their community, organizing for the Fight for 15, organizing for paid family medical leave, organizing around the Fair Share Amendment, that members are actually more engaged and more excited, that they see the union as the place where they have collective power, and that power extends beyond the union to the community. So we have community, union, labor, faith groups working together to make it a more just world. That's not going away, and I see members more excited about that vision of the union, and I am hopeful and actually optimistic that we're going to be able to sustain and actually grow our power, because people see the special interests that are coming after us, and they know that we have to join together in our collective power to fight those special interests, wealthy special interests.
Barbara Mattaloni is the president of the Massachusetts Teachers Association. Thank you so much. And Charlie Cipio, senior fellow at the Pioneer Institute for Public Policy Research, thank you. And Nancy Gertner in Aspen, Colorado. I actually, since you are our legal analyst, you're our straight down the middle legal analyst, I'm giving you 30 seconds to give us your final thought on this case today.
Well, I think it upends 40 years of settled law and multiple cases. It's not just the Aberin case that was in 1970 that no one paid attention to. There's been articulation of this. That upending that kind of precedent is already a frightening thing. It's one thing to upend precedent when the technology overtakes us. This is simply upending precedent because the majority disagreed with it. And given the changes in the court today, that should give us all pause.
Well, Nancy Gertner, WBUR legal analyst and retired federal judge, thank you so much for joining us as well.
Thank you.
Oh, I always feel like we're just getting started in these conversations, but we'll be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.